Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined by Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst and all-around great guy. Skillsy, how we doing this evening?
Thanks for the all-around great guy. No one's ever said that before, so I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, I feel like, Hal, if you had a business card, one of your titles on said business card would be all-around good guy.
All-around good guy. Can you make money doing that?
You might be able to.
Sign me up.
Some people have been able to make money doing that. So it would read Preds radio analyst, expert bag chucker, and all-around good guy. So
perfect. Love it.
Appreciate you joining us here on the program here this evening. The Nashville Predators getting a 3-0 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks on Saturday afternoon. A fun environment inside Bridgestone Arena for a matinee game. And how, I mean, UC Saros, I don't know if he stood on his head for the entire 60 minutes, but he stood on his head enough to secure the shutout. A 41-save performance for UC Saros, who is just on fire right now between the pipes for the Preds. I mean, if it weren't for Saros, that game is probably a little bit more high scoring than it was on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like Saros played well enough and stood on his head for the shutout, but I feel like the Preds played well enough to get the win, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, yeah, Saros has been fantastic. You know what is fun to watch is he's making hard saves look pretty easy just by his positioning, and His pads are so fast. Like, some of the saves he made didn't look like a big deal, but they were labeled shots, and he's kicking his pads out. Perfect timing and in control all the time. There really wasn't any crazy acrobatic saves, right? And that's what's kind of scary is, like, you say, wow, you had a shutout. You had the 41 saves. He must have been tested. Well, it didn't even look like he was tested. That's how good he was.
Yeah, well, a couple of those saves that you mentioned – cross ice one-timers where he read it perfectly and he doesn't have to sprawl out and make a stick save or, you know, a glove save. He's making the pad save or the blocker save almost with ease, which you see a lot of goaltenders not be able to make saves like that. And I have always felt like UC Saros has traditionally been as good as the team in front of him when he's been the goaltender for the Nashville Predators. But it feels lately like he's putting the team on his back and carrying them to some victories here.
Yeah, he did that. I mean, how many stops did he have a while ago? I mean, he was unreal in that game.
He matched his jersey number in Florida for that one game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he stood on his head then, but now I feel like he's in a rhythm where the team really trusts what he's going to do. And you know, to break it down even deeper, if you look at that 5-on-3. Which, I mean, if you talk about winning games, you kill a 5-on-3, that'll get you over the hump. That's a big morale booster and a huge pivotal point in the game. But the Preds took away everything. All they left was a DeBrincat one-timer, which you say, okay, you don't want to leave a DeBrincat one-timer. But Saros knew exactly where that was and was able to get out there and make those saves. I think he made 3 saves on him, 1 missed the net. And you look at that point in the game and you say, wow, he had to step up. But he knows where that shot's coming from. Any goalie, if you're going out on a penalty kill and you say, hey, this is the shot you're going to have to stop, because there's going to be one shot that you're going to have to stop, and you say, that's going to be it, just be ready for it, then they feel a lot more confident going out there and saying, okay, I'll get that stop. And they did that really well. And I think they, you know, they're jiving together right now. It's not just goaltending. It's not just defense. It's the whole thing that they're putting together, and that includes the forwards. I don't leave them out. They got to play defense too, and right now they are.
UC Saros is 8-2 in his last 10 games. He has a save percentage of .962 in his last 11 appearances. Both numbers obviously very strong. Hal, do you feel like this is the best that you've seen Saros play?
Yeah, he's had spurts. Right now it seems to be, it's not it's not just a game here or there. Beginning of the season, he was playing really well, and then he'd fall off and give up a soft one. He'd be like, we kind of need that save right now. But the team wasn't playing as well, you know? So now I look at it where the team is playing well and he's playing well. This is as good as I've seen. Confidence wise, I think he's aggressive on pucks. He's not panicking. And so he's moving smooth across the crease. He's fun to watch right now, to be honest with you. It's he doesn't have to dive across because he's already there. And so just smooth and effortless sometimes.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Brian Porth alongside Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst and all-around good guy here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Hal, another player that we have spent a lot of time recently talking about is Eli Tolvanen. And I was at the game Saturday with some family, and when he got the puck right before he unloaded the slap shot that resulted in the first goal of the game, I could feel it coming. And it was one of those power plays where you were on the edge of your seat. You were expecting something to happen. The puck goes over to Tolvanen, and he rifles it home. And it feels like now with Tolvanen on that power play, and especially when Forsberg is also healthy, and you have the two of them flanking the offensive zone power play, that is now an edge of your seat kind of power play where you think something's about to happen. Whereas in seasons prior, you were not on the edge of your seat. If anything, you were getting out of your seat, going to the bathroom or going back to get a soda or a beer because you figured they weren't going to score in the next 2 minutes. I mean, Tolvanen, to me, Hal, is making a huge difference on that power play. What are you seeing?
Well, Tolvanen is certainly the guy that it all stems from. But I see, you know, you look at the work that Granlund is doing down low. You have Josi up top, who's a threat. You take Forsberg out of it and you say, okay, what is Yarncroak going to do there? But Yarncroak had that nice seam pass that was set up. And so what I'm seeing is penalty kills coming in, trying to figure out what the Preds are all about. And they know about Tolvanen now. They know. But I think they're in a point right now where Tolvanen has the confidence and the team has the confidence to set him up in a position like that bad bypass from Yarncroak over to Tolvanen, where Tolvanen is so high, he's not a threat up there, but he's timing that pass. He knows he has a confidence that Yarncroak's going to get it to him, so he's stepping into it, and that is a game changer. And that's what is fun to watch, the progressions that they're using. Now, the more and more Tolvanen is scoring and the more they're going to extend out up onto him, the more you're going to see the down low plays open up, and that's where Granlund can go to work. And whoever they have in the middle, whether that's Johansson or if they put Cousins in there, they have or Howla, they have different options in the middle. But they're going to get open because teams have to start respecting the same way you do, you know, Ovechkin or Patrick Laine. You know that deadly shot is from out there. You got to take it away. And that's what's awesome is the confidence that Tolvanen has. It's I know you're coming. I'm still going to bring it. And he's got the wrist shot. He's got the slap shot. He can pull it in. He can make the back pass to Josi for the one timer. So it's not as predictable as you would think, but at the same time, you just keep feeding the kid and he keeps scoring.
Well, on that goal Saturday on the power play, it felt like he had almost all day to shoot. He could, you know, go to the concession stand, get a sandwich and come back and still be able to get a slap shot off.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, as a right defenseman, you're staying in front. You got to stay down there because Granlund is down by the net and you have to, you know, your left defenseman is out towards Yarncroak. And then you say, as soon as it goes up to Josi, I'm gonna cheat out there on Tolvanen. But if they bypass it, then you're stuck down low. And that's where the challenge is. And Tolvanen, he's so good reading the play before he gets the puck and finding a seam that he can step into. I mean, think about it. There's not too many guys that get a puck and can take all day and step into one right there. Usually you have to move it quick to get that shot. And he just times it perfectly, sees the space, and he's got all the confidence in the world right now. So he says, all right, boys, I'm going to leave the zone. He almost leaves the zone and heads out to the blue line and then comes in, and that defenseman is put in a tough spot. That's a thankless job, because you're coming out halfway and you're expected to block that, and you know he's going high cheddar. And so good luck trying to block this one.
Well, it's amazing just what an improvement in special teams has done for this team in their last 11 games. They've won 9 of their last 11. The penalty kill over that time is clicking at 90.2%. The power play clicking at 27.3%. Those aren't numbers that are going to just completely blow you away, but they have been rock solid. The penalty kill comes through on that 5-on-3 early in the third period on Saturday. The power play comes through again. I mean, how these special teams right now are really helping a Predators team that it seems day after day is having a new injury mount up.
Yeah. And you need to, especially through the injuries, you can't lose games on special teams, and they've been winning them. And sometimes the stats, like, who really cares about the stats? I'm looking for a team to win a game. And you look at that Tolvanen goal on the power play, that sets you up to win a game. Of course, a 5-on-3. And then Sissons with the penalty shot goal is a penalty kill goal. They're doing all the right things. Penalty kill has been kind of fun to watch, because it's almost like they're not working as hard. They're just working smart, They're not chasing down the boards. They're just a slight little push down the boards, taking away time and space. They're forcing guys wide on the entries and picking off passes, and that's how they got all those chances on the penalty kill. It's fun to watch the way they're doing all those things. Right now, this team seems to have confidence in each other, and everyone talks about, well, you got to work hard, but you got to work hard together. And right now. I feel like they have trust, and penalty kill is all about trust. If I push down here, you better cover my backside. And right now they're doing it all the way across the ice. So that's where you're seeing the success come from.
Do you feel like that is the root of this turnaround this season, is confidence within each other on the ice?
Yeah, I do. I think with the, especially the injuries to Josi and Ellis, with those guys out, I feel like five guys in the zone playing hard defense, realizing that they can't do, we can't cheat. We have to make sure we come back and help out these D. They kind of identified their defensive structure, I think, that way. And now you get guys healthy back in the lineup. And I feel like Josi is a different player too. He doesn't have to do it all by himself. And he was trying for a long time. I mean, he'd just given it everything he got. The last Dallas game before he was injured, he was doing everything he could to will this team to win. And now he's fitting into the defensive structure and playing his game. And, it's good for the whole team, because that trust is there now. And now they can build on that.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Hill, Ryan Porth and Hal Gill here with you on the program. So Hal, the Preds win 3-0 over the Blackhawks. Did you feel like that was the least effective that Patrick Kane has been against the Preds, not only this season, but in a long time?
Yeah, he really didn't get anything. And I think you put that to, a five-man unit. If you try to play one-on-one against Pat Kane and say, hey, Roman Josi, you go ahead. As good as Josi is, it's tough to stop him, because not only can he beat you one-on-one, but he can pull you out and get you out of position and make a nice play and dish it. So you need five guys doing that. And yeah, that was impressive to shut down him, especially, to see Patrick Kane go out on a 5-on-3 and not score is like kind of mind blowing, right?
I mean,
that doesn't happen. And so tip your hat to team defense and really everyone getting involved. It's not just one D pair that's going out. They're really, everyone had to play against him at some point, and everyone did the job.
Do you feel like the hit that Nick Cousins put on him in the first period kind of shook him up? Felt like after that, he really wasn't all that effective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a million different things you can look at. Sometimes, with Patrick Kane, you could see him early in the game. He went way back and tried to wind up, and they closed the time and space on him quick through the neutral zone. Now, if he gets that confidence through the neutral zone early on in the game, then he gets his feet under him, then he starts feeling good. You lay a body on him, you give him a check, you kind of get under his skin a little bit, and then he he rethinks the way he's got to play the game that night. And if you get in a guy's head like that early on, it plays out the game a little bit differently. So yeah, for sure. It's everything, you know, including the Cousins hit.
You know, Patrick Kane also had the turnover that led to Colton Sissons getting the shorthanded breakaway, which well, then resulted in the penalty shot.
What is he doing there?
Right. Yeah, just a lazy backhanded pass.
You got him off his game.
Yeah, exactly. So, by the way, Colton Sissons with a nice penalty shot goal going bar in on Lankinen. So Colton Sissons being the first to score a shorthanded penalty shot since, I believe it was 2011 when Martin Erat did that. For the Nashville Predators. So good stuff there.
So pretty.
It was a thing of beauty. Scary play with Victor Arvidsson running into Kirby Dach. Arvidsson was down on the ice for a couple of minutes. We don't know his status going into the game tomorrow night at Detroit, the start of a two-game set against the Red Wings for the Nashville Predators. But you hear the news of Alexander Carrier coming out Saturday morning. You've got Forsberg out, you've got Duchesne out, you've got Ellis out, amongst a host of others. I wonder how sustainable this success can be when it seems like you're losing a key player every single game.
Yeah, but you look around the league and I think you see a lot of that happening. You know, you look at Florida losing Ekblad. You go up and down every team and you're like, ooh, how are they? You know, Radulov has been out for a while. I feel like every team, it's kind of a crazy year. So, depth is going to be tested. That's why they have the taxi squad. But the exciting part for me is like every time the Preds look like they're injured and down and out, they have someone else step up. And like that doesn't just happen. That's the Preds have been fortunate in that regard. You know, you get. Obviously, could you imagine if you said, hey, if Carrier was going to be out, it would hurt the team? Like that was never a thought before. I mean, that kid stepped up and played some great hockey. So it's just next man up. But it's exhausting right now. I'm sure these guys are just spent. It's mentally and physically exhausting.
Well,
emotionally, too.
Yeah. Well, they get the 2 days off after the victory over Chicago on Saturday before tomorrow night's game at Detroit, pregame at 5:30, puck drop at 6:30. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, featuring Hal Gill alongside play-by-play man Pete Weber. The Preds are now 5-0 against the Blackhawks this season. The Preds have absolutely owned Chicago since the start of the 2017 postseason. So I know a lot of Preds fans are happy about that. Now, the trade deadline is 1 week away from today. Hal Gill is someone who has had experience at the trade deadline as a former NHL player. Traded not once, but twice, including once to the Nashville Predators. We'll get his stories about being a player at the trade deadline and getting traded at the deadline. And also, where is this team going to go now at the trade deadline, now that they've won 9 of their last 11 games, unexpectedly putting themselves into a playoff position, still sitting in fourth place inside the Central Division? That's all coming up next here on Preds Insiders. He's Hal Gill. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined by Hal Gill here on the show. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Ryan Porth and Hal Gill here with you on this Monday evening, reacting to the Predators winning 9 of their last 11 games. Still in fourth place in the Central Division, which is in a playoff spot after the 3-0 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks on Saturday. They are officially now over 500 for the first time in a long time, it feels like. So, Hal, we are also 1 week away from the NHL trade deadline, and you are a guy who has experience at the trade deadline. You were traded not once, but twice before the trade deadline, once in 2008 from Toronto to Pittsburgh, and then another time in February of 2012. Preds fans will remember you were acquired from the Montreal Canadiens before that trade deadline. So just in general, what is this time like for an NHL player where
it's tough. Everyone's ears go up, and you talk about the two times I got traded, but there's a lot of times where I didn't get traded. You know, you're sitting around looking, going, who's going to go? And maybe your best friend is going to go. Maybe, you're going to be building. Maybe you're going to be selling. it's kind of a crazy time of year. I remember in, early in my career, it was all but done. I was going to Ottawa and I was going to get traded. And I was kind of like, you know, going through for a week, just like, when is this going to happen? And it never happened. And it was like, you know, I didn't know how to handle it. I was young and I was upset that my team didn't want me, but then all of a sudden they did want me and they didn't trade me. And so there's a lot of mind games that go on. As I got older, I just kind of blanked out the noise. In Toronto, before I went to Pittsburgh, they told me, yeah, we're not going to move you. We like what you're doing. We wouldn't give you up. And then about a week later, I was gone. So that move kind of slapped me in the face, but I ended up going to Pittsburgh and joining a good team there and had some success. And then, you know, going further on, you know, I thought everything was good in Montreal and then it started to go sour. And I was so happy, you know, talk about a life-changing moment, moving to Nashville and falling in love with Nashville. So it's kind of a crazy thing. And, you know, looking at the Preds this year, I'm not sure what they're thinking. You know, before all they're talking about is Ekholm and Granlund. Where are they going? What are they going to be doing now? Are they going to build? Are they looking to get another guy? I mean, what is Poile's game plan here? And I'm sure Poile is confused too. You know, what do you do with this team? I talked to one of the scouts for the Bruins that was at one of the games, and he said, initially I was here looking to see if we could get guys and who we should get. And now the Bruins kind of went south for a little while and the Preds are gearing up. So he's like, now it's almost a different story. I think this year is going to be tough. I don't know how much activity there's going to be just because I feel like GMs are going to look around and go, I don't know where my team is and I don't want to change them and try to jack up and win the cup this year and sacrifice a future for, you know, don't forget. I think that it's got to be in the back of their head. I mean, this is a business and you want to win the cup, but you want to win the cup so you can make money. I mean, if you don't have a packed arena, it's going to be tough to make money through those playoff games. And so I wonder if that's going to take into account, like if they'll look at it and say, hey, let's not give up our future for this year. So I'm expecting GMs to kind of sit tight a little bit longer, but it's a crazy time of year. And you know, sometimes the business gets in the way of what you as a player really think is important. And that's winning. You know, you want to play with your teammates and win games. All of a sudden the business side comes in where you say, okay, we're not going to be able to sign this guy, so we better get something for him. And you lose a good player, not because he did anything wrong and not because you did anything wrong, just because of the business. And so that can be a tough thing to go through, especially for the younger guys who haven't really been through it before.
Well, you're leading me into one of the conversations around this Predators team where you've got a younger team now with a lot of young players up from either Chicago in the AHL or Milwaukee last season, perhaps experiencing their first NHL trade deadline. You've got star players on this team within trade rumors, most notably Matthias Ekholm. How tough is it when you're in the room, whether you don't buy or you do sell, and that may not be the approach that you're wanting to take as a team? How tough is it sometimes for players to understand that business side?
When you're younger, I remember I was with the Bruins and I remember Ray Bourque went into the office and we're all saying, yeah, he's our captain. He's going to go ask for some players, some help down the stretch. And we're going to make a playoff push and we're going to make a run for it. And then, you know, a week later he gets traded and we find out he asked for a trade and goes on to Colorado, wins the cup. Yeah, that's great. But what about us? You left us hanging, buddy. And so, you know, you're looking around going, all right, can we talk David Poile into getting us players? Cause that locker room wants to win. And I had a good conversation with your buddy Stillman and, you know, he's saying, well, this guy's playing well, so trade him. If you trade a guy every time he plays well, Kelly Yarncroke's playing well, let's see if we can get something for him. Well, you're getting rid of all your guys. And you want all these guys, you know, you talk about striking lightning in a bottle, and you want all these guys to play well. You got Tolvanen playing well, you got Yarncroke playing well. Can we put these guys together and get contributions from the guys who are, you know, you're really expecting to play well? You know, like Johansson and Duchesne, you get those guys healthy, you get Ellis back. And now you have other guys playing well, where Olivier is playing well and Trennan, that line is contributing. And now you're looking at, hey, why can't we beat Tampa? Why can't we beat Florida? Let's go in and see what we can do against Carolina. So all these guys are looking around. They want to win together. And so it's a tough situation. But again, that business side is tough to handle because, you know, what's the end game for Poyle? You know, is it to get something for Ekholm because they don't think they can sign him? That's a tough thing to handle as a player, saying we're going to lose a guy because we won't be able to afford him. But you want all these guys playing well. But if they play well, then they get moved. So it's a double-edged sword. It's tough to handle.
Well, with Ekholm too, you might be moving him because you get an offer that you just can't refuse. You might want to sign Ekholm after next season, but if, say, Boston or Philly or Washington comes to you with multiple first-round picks or multiple prospects and three assets that you feel like you can win with in the future, I think David Poyle would have to consider that. And if he pulls the trigger on a move like that, you know, that's obviously a business decision, trying to maximize your asset into three additional assets in a trade that can help you in the future, but the guys in the locker room right now don't want to hear about 2023 and 2024.
Yeah, no, that's the whole thing. And especially with the salary cap, you know, in the old days, you just say, who cares? Let's burn money. We want to win. And now it's like, it changes the game. And so it'll be interesting. I think this year is going to be tough for GMs to do too much, but you said it. If Ryan Ellis is untouchable, Roman Josi is untouchable, Pecorine is untouchable. You know, like you go through all this and then you say, okay, well, what if we get offered something that we can't say no to? And then untouchable becomes pretty touchable. And hey, we got to make that move. We just don't know what those offers are. And Poyle's been pretty good, hasn't he? Just kind of playing all the cards close to his vest. He's honest that he's taking phone calls, and then he's honest. Some of the calls have dropped off, and so now he's looking at different ways to handle his business. So it's a juggling act, that's for sure.
Well, the conversation around the team has 100% changed in the last month or so. And to your point, David Poyle made it sound like last week with Darren Donick and Chase that the conversations that he's having around the league are changing as well. And it has caused quite the fascinating debate within Preds fans and Preds media, Hal, of what should David Poyle do at the trade deadline? Because this team has won 9 of 11. They've looked pretty darn good in most of those games where they look like a completely different team than the team that we saw for the first 6 weeks of this regular season. And it's causing a lot of people to ask the question of what is this team? Is this team one that can make noise in the playoffs? Is this team that has caught lightning in a bottle just for a couple of weeks and, you know, they don't stand a chance in the playoffs? They may not even make the playoffs. There's no guarantee that they'll even make it. So how do you kind of view this Preds team in terms of what they are as David Poyle has to make that same call in less than a week?
Yeah, you say this is the interesting part for me is I look at the Preds as, and you said they're playing as a team. There's really not, and yeah, you have certain guys that are standing out and playing really well, but their success in winning is due to the fact that they have four lines that are playing well. I wouldn't want to change those four lines. You know, you look at Duchesne and you say, well, obviously we want Duchesne healthy, but where do you put him in? Like, what line does he disrupt? Each line has been effective. You get a healthy defenseman, you get Ryan Ellis back in, Hopefully Carrier gets healthy and comes back in, because I think he could be a part of the success that they have going forward. You have goaltending. I look at if I put on my GM hat, I don't want to change the chemistry of the team by trying to go and sign someone. I also don't want to give away someone, because it could be just giving away one guy could change everything. So, if it's me, I like to sit where this team is and let him play it out. And of course, I'm not taking that phone call where it's like, I got to make this move. You know, sometimes those phone calls come in and someone's really hot for a guy and you got to make that move. But overall, I would ride this team out. Let them play as a team. They've proven to you and the coaching staff that they're buying into what they're doing. So if you take one guy out or try to add another guy in, it ends up being, addition by subtraction. I don't know. That's not the case right now. I think you move someone and or you try to get someone and it could ruin that chemistry. And I think that chemistry is what's helping them win. So I ride this team out and see what they can do, because I don't put it past them winning a couple rounds here. And then, you say, oh, Tolvanen's hot, Yarncroke's hot. Maybe you get Duchene back in the lineup and he gets hot. And then Johansson starts to click, because I've seen moments where Johansson looks good. Hopefully Arvidsson is healthy and he comes back. And, all these things you look at and you say, if we get it together and we have that team chemistry, they could do some damage.
He's Hal Gill. He is the radio analyst for the Nashville Predators. Hal, the news came out today about Grant Mismatch signing the entry-level deal with the Nashville Predators, former draft pick. I really hope he sticks in the NHL, because I just want to hear you and Pete call the name Mismatch for the next 10 years in a Preds uniform.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you look at – I think he's going to be a good player. We've seen him at the tournaments and obviously a good career at North Dakota. And I think he's an exciting player to watch, and obviously a great name to say. So that'll be fun. You got Ferentz coming up, and he had a good career, great career at BU. So I'm excited to see what he brings. And there's a good youth group coming in. So I don't know. After this season, I never would have thought that these young guys would have come in and had such an impact on the team. Not just on the ice, but I feel like energy wise, there's a new life to the team. And so that's kind of been exciting, as much as we hate to see all the injuries. Maybe these guys can come in and have an impact, because they do, right? I mean, these guys are having an impact a lot earlier than we expect. And so as much as you want to let them develop their game and take your time with them, it's fun to see them jump in and see what they have.
Perhaps the injuries have been a blessing in disguise for this team moving forward. So Hal Gill, he'll be on the call tomorrow night with Pete Weber starting at 6:30. All the pregame action at 5:30 for the Preds at the Red Wings as the Preds season moves along tomorrow night on the road. Hal, thank you as always for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, and enjoy the games. This is a fun time of year, so it gets me all fired up, and I'm sure everyone else gets fired up too. Enjoy.
Thanks as always to Hal Gill for joining us here on Preds Insiders. Always enjoy the conversations with Skillsy, and once again, you can hear him on the call every single Predators game on the radio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game alongside the legendary Pete Weber. Speaking of legendary, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN is certainly just that. He will join us coming up next on Preds Insiders. We'll get his thoughts on the trade deadline and the Preds approach before next Monday afternoon. That's next on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders here on this Monday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in studio, now joined by ESPN NHL senior writer Greg Wyshynski, talking all things NHL trade deadline, with the deadline coming up 1 week from today. We are officially less than 1 week from the trade deadline on April 12th. Greg, first of all, how are you doing? And second of all, the trade deadline, It's certainly an interesting time here in Nashville. you came on with Jared Stillman here within the last week or two and had some passionate takes about how you think the Nashville Predators should remain sellers, even though now they've won 9 of their last 11 games. Do you still feel that way despite the way the Preds played last week? And if so, why?
Oh, listen, I think it's great that they've moved up the standings. I think it's great that they've made something out of this season when a lot of people had them written off. These are all good things. But yeah, they should still be sellers. Again, like, I don't think we should lose sight of the big picture here. And the big picture here is that the Central Division is what it is. The Predators right now have a 526 points percentage. Maybe there's a chance that that somebody can fall back to the pack, although it doesn't appear it's going to be the Florida Panthers, who, you know, despite losing their top defenseman, seem like they haven't skipped a beat. I don't think it's going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they'll probably get their act together, and the Carolina Hurricanes have been the Carolina Hurricanes. So what you're looking at right now is the Nashville Predators surging up for the chance to get eliminated in the first round by somebody really, really good. That should not supersede getting assets, futures, what have you, at the trade deadline for some of the expiring contracts that they have, maybe even cutting deeper into this roster. A winning streak shouldn't change the conversation that we had a couple months ago about how this team may need to shift directions to the point where their general manager might not be their general manager next year. And so, yeah, it's great that things have gotten better. It's great that there might be playoff hockey in Nashville, but by no means should it rewrite the plan that was going to be in place for this team.
So in these 11 games that they've played, where they've won 9 of them, they've played Chicago multiple times. They've played Dallas multiple times. You can argue that with those two teams, they are catching them at the right time within their schedules, because Dallas and Chicago aren't exactly playing well compared to maybe how they played earlier in the season. They've played multiple games against the Detroit Red Wings, who are the clear, ugly stepchild of the Central Division. So if they were doing this, say, against Florida, against Carolina, against Tampa Bay, would you feel any different?
I mean, sure. I think if you get proof of concept against those teams, maybe you feel a little bit better than you know, the fact that they're climbing over beatable teams to get back in the playoff race. But look, you know, if you finish fourth and Tampa finishes first, you're not catching the Tampa team that you may have had some success against in the regular season. Mm-hmm. You're catching a Tampa team that'll get Nikita Kucherov back for the first round of the playoffs.
Scary thought.
A well-rested Nikita Kucherov. And yeah, I know that everybody has visions of the Columbus Blue Jackets dancing in their heads when it comes to facing Tampa Bay in the first round and how you have to be in it to win it, and you never know what's going to happen. But look, we're not talking about dealing away the top line or dealing away, you know, a top defenseman necessarily. I mean, I guess Ekholm would be that, but it's not as if, you know, we're talking about trading Ellis in season, for example. We're talking about making some smart decisions at the deadline and trying to sell high on players that have a little bit of juice to them. I mean, there's a market for Granlund. There's obviously a market for Ekholm for multiple teams, to the point where I think you could say defensive defenseman is outside of the usual, you know, point-producing top-line center, which isn't available at this deadline. I think defensive defenseman is the thing that most teams are coveting, to the point where there's actually a marketplace behind Ekholm, in the sense that teams are lining up for the Alex Goligoskis in the world in case Ekholm's not available. So, I mean, to me, it just makes too much sense to just kind of deal some of the assets that you have off your roster. It's not raising the white flag on what you're building there. It's just making smart decisions given what the marketplace is.
Let's hypothetically say that Mattias Ekholm is available and he gets traded by next Monday's deadline. Where do you see the best fit for Mattias Ekholm?
Well, there's a couple teams that are really interesting, and it's going to be kind of predicated by who's going to react first, you know, or in some cases overreact. Like, you look at a team like the Winnipeg Jets, for example, that'd be a perfect landing place for him. The Philadelphia Flyers have been seeking an Ekholm type ever since Matt Niskanen retired. I think that they would covet his services, although you wonder exactly how many chips they're going to push into a season where it doesn't seem like one of their best players, Carter Hart, can get his act together, and where they may end up being also Rans in their division. I think Ekholm is a perfect fit for the Boston Bruins as well, and they've got some assets to move. So It really is, like I said, an interesting marketplace this year for a defensive defenseman, especially for someone like Ekholm, who's not simply just out there, you know, playing in the D zone and unable to produce any offense. I mean, you know, historically he's been able to do both quite well. And, you know, the only wrinkle is the term on his contract and the fact that you do have the specter of the Seattle Kraken expansion draft haunting all of these teams. And if you go out and you pick up a Matias Ekholm, well, then you have to start to worry about what your numbers look like. If you want to protect seven forwards and three defensemen, do you have to start cutting side deals to protect one of the people you already have on the roster? That's the wrinkle with Ekholm insofar as his marketplace at deadline. But there's no question that he's a cut above the, you know, Alex Goligoski's and David Savard's that might be the fallback positions for teams that don't get him.
I've seen some Preds fans say don't trade Ekholm to Winnipeg because they're going to go back to the division alignment that was before this season where Nashville and Winnipeg are in the same division. Do you feel like Preds fans should worry about that at all?
I mean, no. I think I've always felt that I mean, look, I think when it comes to your bigger deals, like if you were looking to trade Philip Forsberg and that's within your division – that's something you should feel kind of wary about, right? But like, I don't necessarily put Matias Ekholm on the level of, oh Jesus, now I got to see Matias Ekholm six times a year kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think he's a very good player, but he's not necessarily the kind of player that you should dread trading with in your own division, especially, you know, if the Jets are as you know, lustfully looking at Ekholm as it seems like they might be, or a player like that, and you get a decent return from them, and all of a sudden they're the ones who regret trading within their division.
Mikael Granlund, where do you see the best fit being for him?
There's just been so much smoke around the Toronto situation that it's hard to believe that that's not going to happen at some point. And it does make a lot of sense for them to acquire him and add him to the middle of that lineup as well. So, I mean, I have to go with that until proven otherwise, but you know, like we talked about with the defensive defenseman, I mean, once Eric Staal comes off the market, and he wasn't even really all that coveted to begin with and only went for a third and a fifth from Montreal, I mean, there aren't a lot of centers of Granlund's ilk that I think are going to be available at this trade deadline that have expiring contracts. So it's a marketplace that should stretch beyond Toronto, but there's just been so much speculation there that it's hard for me to overlook that connection.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN on the line with us here, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Greg, how active is this NHL trade deadline really going to be? Or is it going to be the deadline and not the deadline?
Well, I wrote about this last week in my column on ESPN.com about how this is going to be the weirdest deadline we've ever seen. It's weird for any number of reasons. I mean, beyond the obvious ones like the quarantine situation at the border and all this other stuff. You're seeing a deadline where, like I said, you have the creeping impact of the expansion draft haunting the whole thing as far as teams knowing what their numbers are and not wanting to add anybody with term because then you have to change your configuration of who you're protecting or make side deals to protect additional people. They certainly don't want to have to do that. You have the flat cap situation, which has impacted this season and is going to impact the next several seasons. And then you have this thing, like I mentioned before, about first-round picks where they're usually coin of the realm at the trade deadline and teams are, you know, protecting them or other teams are coveting them. And, you know, a couple general managers told me last week that, you know, first-round picks aren't really anything they want this year because of how mysterious the draft is and what a crapshoot it's going to be because of the interruptions and all of the seasons around the junior leagues and the cancellations of international tournaments and things like that. They simply don't have the same kind of handle on these prospects that they do in typical seasons. So even that's going to change the dynamic of the trade deadline. You take a team like the New York Islanders, for example, who simply have to replace Anders Lee in their lineup as a top winger and do have a number of players they could be looking at, Kyle Palmieri from the Devils, Taylor Hall from the Sabres. But their biggest asset's their first-round pick. And, you know, if the Islanders are going to pick between, you know, 20 and 31 in the draft, as should be expected, I mean, what's the real value of that pick if no one knows who these players are? They're angling to draft at that point in the first round.
Looking at the big picture around the league, who Stanley Cup contender are you buying stock in right now? And then whose stock are you selling?
Well, I mean, we've got this Kong versus Godzilla thing happening in the West between Colorado and Vegas. And it seems like, it feels like whoever emerges from that series is going to be your Stanley Cup favorite, and rightfully so. I mean, those are two tremendous teams, and every time they match up, it's been great hockey. I'm not really buying anybody from the East. I mean, I think the Capitals and the Islanders are, you know, pretty good teams, but deeply flawed teams. I think the Leafs are quite good, even though it's a little bit weird that they haven't completely separated themselves from what I think is a pretty mediocre pack in the North Division. And then you look at the Central, and, you know, Florida's completely outkicked their coverage. They're one of those teams that you really have a hard time getting a handle on whether or not they're going to bring that success into the postseason. Like, what kind of playoff team are they going to be if they have to go to war without having Aaron Ekblad out there? I think that's where that impact could be felt even greater than it is now. I think Carolina is great, and they've been sort of in that bridesmaid mode for a couple seasons, and I think they really would have actually potentially advanced even farther last postseason if Andrei Svechnikov didn't get injured. And then you have the Lightning, who I think, you know, outside of Vegas and Colorado, has to be looked at as the Stanley Cup favorite, if only because of how good they are top to bottom, including probably the best defenseman and best goaltender in the NHL. But also getting Kucherov back in the first round, which completely changes the dynamic of that team. So I think if I was a betting man to answer your question, I'd probably take Tampa just because I don't know who's going to emerge from that Vegas versus Colorado series.
He's Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. By the way, Greg, always enjoy your segments on the Daily Wager on ESPN. And by the way, last week, true story, 2 minutes before you gave your lock of the night, which was an Islanders-Penguins under 5.5, I put a little coin on the over, and I immediately regretted it when you said under, and it hit the under. So props to you.
Let it be said that when I say if I were a betting man, that's a lie. I am a betting man. It's just an expression. And then let me also say that last week I was on absolute fire on the Daily Wager. I mean, I've been told I'm amongst the better best bettors on the show, which makes me very happy because I do put in a good amount of time and making myself look not like an idiot when I make these picks. but if you tune in and you see me hitting these things with regularity, let it be known that it is, you know, I am streakier than the Nashville Predators when it comes to this betting show. But it's super fun to be a part of Daily Wager. And it's also really cool to, you know, be in the like the hockey wagering lane with obviously with us getting the rights back. Because I think that part of the equation for the NHL is a huge one in trying to generate more interest in the game and reaching new audiences is letting people know that there is a variety of fun ways you can bet on hockey besides, you know, laying a puck and a half or betting the over-under.
It is so much fun to bet on the great sport of hockey. Greg, thank you so much for your time here this evening, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, and yes, true story, I immediately regretted the bet of Islanders-Penguins over 5.5 when Greg was so adamant that it was going to be under, and he was right. So anybody who loves sports betting, I would highly recommend the Daily Wager, and especially when Greg Wyshynski makes his appearances on said show. That will do it for Preds Insiders here this evening. Thank you to Hal Gill earlier in the show for joining us here. And thanks, as always, to Greg Wyshynski for giving us a little bit of his time in a busy schedule from ESPN. For Greg Wyshynski, for Hal Gill, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks so much for listening to Preds Insiders here this evening, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.